Hi, folks. Welcome to Changing Arts, a podcast of conversations with people working on the ground in the arts industry to make change in their organizations and in our field. I'm Tom O'Connor. I'm an arts strategist and marketer, as well as a trained educator and social worker. Change happens at every level of the arts ecosystem, from the industry level to the community level, and down to the individuals who get the job done. Each month, I'm sitting down with the people who are really making that change happen. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Changing Arts. Today, we've got a whole different kind of episode for you. I recently sat down in the other chair as a guest on CI to I, a podcast from Capacity Interactive. Their president, Priya Iyer, interviewed me for my views on organizational health in the arts, starting with our people, salary transparency, hiring practices, and a whole lot more. Now, normally I'm the one asking the questions, but with the so-called Great Resignation on so many people's minds right now in our field and beyond, we thought we should share this conversation with you, our listeners, while it's fresh. There's a link to learn more about Capacity Interactive and their podcast in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy this conversation between me and my friend and colleague, Priya Iyer.
Tom, welcome to CI to I. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yeah, you were our first ever guest on CI to I back in March of 2017. So it's so exciting to have you back and to have you back for our first episode in this new refreshed format that we're doing. I'm just so happy that you can be here for that. So this conversation between us today was sparked by the fact that your company, Tom O'Connor Consulting Group, just announced a new policy of working only with clients who offer salary transparency in their job descriptions and in their job listings. So this is a super strong stance to take right now in the middle of what people are calling the Great Resignation. It's really exciting. So I'm super eager to just have this bigger conversation with you about what's been on your mind lately around hiring practices, our industry, retention, culture, all of these things. But I'd love to start with just this idea of salary transparency. So can you tell me more about why you feel salary transparency is so important?
Absolutely. And thanks for highlighting this, Priya. I mean, I'm always, always happy to talk about this topic. And I should just say briefly that, you know, we are a pretty multifaceted firm in terms of the consulting work we do in addition to the executive search work. And this was really a stance we wanted to take on the executive search side of our business to really make sure we were living in accordance with our values as a company in a way that I could really, you know, frankly face my staff about and make sure that we were feeling like we were putting our money where our mouth was. But as far, and I'll talk more about that later, but as far as, you know, why it's important, I think that we need to be very honest with ourselves about the fact, as employers, as an industry, money is a huge factor in people's lives. I don't know that anybody can really deny that. And keeping candidates in the dark about a role's salary is, you know, at best, gamesmanship, and at worst, just deceptive, you know, and so we feel like, you know, if we don't want to be an industry made up of people for whom money is not a concern, and I think we're all working for, you know, to be in a more diverse, more representative place, that this is a really important way that we do that. So, you know, that's the values-based sort of philosophical answer. From an operational perspective, let me tell you, as a person who does hiring every day for a wide range of roles, marketing, development, and executive leadership, all in arts organizations, we have a much better time hiring when we can have fully transparent conversations with candidates. They know what they're getting into. They feel respected. They feel honored. And it's just a smoother process with a whole lot less wasted time. We're grateful that we've been able to make this change. We're proud of it. And we've gotten a lot of great response to it as well.
Yeah. Two things that you said there that I want to pull out. One, just this idea of acknowledging that money is a factor. I think oftentimes in our industry, there's a love for the industry that drives all of us, you know, but that doesn't mean that money isn't also a factor, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want to pull that out. And the other word I really enjoyed that you used is honored. That word, this idea that There's a feeling of honor going through this process, having that information. That's really interesting. And I like that framing and that perspective of what it could feel like to have the transparency and what that might do for somebody else going through it.
And thanks for pulling that out. And I mean, the honor piece is huge for me, because I do think that we have, I've mentioned similar things to you about this in the past, but I do think we have in the past really relied in our organizations on what I have called sort of the passion pay gap, like where we just sort of expect people to do the work for less because they love the artistic product. And I get where that comes from. It doesn't come from a deceptive place, but it has turned into a serious pay inequity in our business, not just in relation to the for-profit world, which I think we probably all kind of expect, but within role to role within organizations. You know, we need to just sort of try to minimize that kind of inconsistency and make sure that there's a level playing field even within organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So in your statement, one thing that I deeply appreciated is just the empathy that you presented for arts organizations and sort of where they are in this journey. I'm going to read part of the statement that you rolled out, because I think the words are really powerful. So you say, "We acknowledge that not all organizations are prepared for salary transparency at this moment for different reasons, and we respect every organization where they are." This is just such important perspective, the idea that this is not meant to be some sort of universal truth for every single person, every single organization, every single moment, but instead that you made a decision that aligns, to your point, with your values, the values of your business in particular in this moment in time. And so with that in mind, I'd love to just unpack that a little bit. Can you talk about some of the barriers that you've seen, that you've observed, that arts organizations might face in trying to make a similar change or trying to make a move in the same direction that you have?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will start with the fact that, like most things, the barriers to this, I think, are often rooted in fear. I think that identifying where that fear lives in the organization is an important part of understanding the health of that organization. And I should say, too, that the work that we do goes well beyond hiring, and we're focused on organizational health in so many ways that I get to look at this from a variety of different vantage points. But the fear I think that people have is on a couple of levels. On the sort of most kind of virtuous level, I think it's, you know, maybe that organization is in the midst of kind of recalibrating salaries, and they feel like they're sort of a little too early for them to be speaking publicly or acknowledging publicly what a salary for a role is, because it's going to cause some sort of internal disparity to be inflamed before they've sort of leveled those things out, which is fully understandable. In some cases, I think organizations are just embarrassed by what they can afford. While yes, obviously I wish they could afford more, and if they can afford more, I hope that they will dedicate the funds that role is worth. But I understand that perspective, and some organizations just need to be upfront about that. There might be either an early career person or somebody who's transitioning careers that might be interested in something and could make that leap. But that's often the case. But I would say the sort of what I would refer to as the less virtuous barrier to it that we see with some regularity, not with our clients often, but sometimes, is folks just trying to pay as little as they possibly can, trying to pay as little as they can get away with, frankly, trying to improve bargaining power. There is, as I said in that statement on our website, you know, there is a really common refrain we hear that if we list the salary publicly, then everybody's just going to ask for the top of the range. I'm here to categorically tell you that is false. That is, you know, I recruit for a wide range of roles with a wide range of salaries in a lot of different geographic locations, and that is never the case. And also, you know, as I mentioned before, there are people who are in the process of recalibrating their internal pay scales to get parity. There are some organizations that want to just keep that where it is as long as they possibly can. That I think is a really toxic long-term process or sister system to have in place when it comes to the long-term health of an organization. Over the last, 4 or 5 years, We've been advocating for this, and there's really been a sea change. I don't think anybody will be surprised to hear it. There's really been a sea change in the last couple of years, and I extend a lot of gratitude to the activists in this work that are, you know, across a lot of different industries, mm-hmm. because we all have know from reading articles and studies and whatnot that the downstream effects of this kind of lack of transparency disproportionately affects women, people of color, and we want to make sure that yeah. you know from an equity standpoint. That this kind of work can really address all parts of the system and also and all points of the system in terms of the different intersectional identities that we're trying to represent in our workforce.
Yeah, there's something that you said earlier. There could be an embarrassment for what's actually possible, and I feel like the root of that is shame. Just people feeling that shame for what actually is possible. And I also really like this point of parity or equity within our industry and what that means for, you know, not necessarily sitting here and comparing to what's possible in for-profit side, this for-profit side of things or in other industries, but really being held accountable to what equity means within our space, within our industry, and holding ourselves to that level.
And just to say, parity does not necessarily mean everything has to be uniform across the board either. I mean, there's so many mm-hmm. there's so many variables by market, by role, by revenue responsibilities. I mean, all these kinds of things depending on the organization. So there's still within that a lot of room for variation. And I have no hesitation or embarrassment or reluctance to explain that to candidates who are looking at different roles and sizing them up. But we have to be able to do that with all of the facts on the table. Yeah.
Making an informed decision or having an mm-hmm. informed conversation. That's great. Yep. So you made this decision that, again, aligns with the values of your business and where you are right now. So I'd love to shift to hear a little bit more about how you see this decision in the context of your business.
Well, I'm glad you really framed it around our values, because that really is where it came from. It's something we've been thinking about for quite a while. You know, I always say, and I always feel that values have very little to do with what we say and everything to do with what we tolerate. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is, in this case, this is a very clear example of that, where there was a time when I was, you know, we were working very closely with clients to push them in this direction, and not always, we're not always successful. And the tone of that, the tone of those searches would change dramatically in terms of the kinds of conversations we were having with candidates, in terms of the kind of inherent defensiveness that comes that you have to sort of put up with candidates who do feel strongly about this particular point. And we agree with them. And so how do we, as a, you know, from a value standpoint, have those conversations? Obviously, we're professionals. We're not going to speak ill of our clients, who, again, are not always doing this out of malice or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just a policy. But there was more and more of a disconnect as we thought about it. And, you know, to really ask my team, who have been, you know, working their tails off to find folks for these roles we're recruiting for, to do something that's out of line with what our company values are, felt like we weren't walking the talk. And it just mm. more and more felt like that was not something I could abide. But, you know, make no mistake, you know, we're not doing this just to feel good about ourselves. We will lose money over this. And, you know, I'm positive mm-hmm. about it, but I'm fine with that. On a crass level, we're fortunate enough to be in demand to the point that we can be selective about who we work with. But even when that's no longer true someday, which happens to everybody, mm-hmm. I will be fine with this decision, because yeah. you know, it means we're sticking to our values. It means we're making for a better field. Otherwise, I don't really see the point of doing this work. I mean, all mm-hmm. of us, no matter what our position is in the arts field, all of us, if we really wanted to, could be taking our skills to a more lucrative field. You know, yeah. we are doing this because we care about this work. We care about this industry. And to me, that's just more important.
That's really powerful. There's not every day that there are decisions that become roots like that, that, you know, weren't there from the beginning. And mm-hmm. just the clarity that you have in that is just so strong. And I really appreciate that.
Thanks for saying so. And I also just want to say, you know, I'm conscious of the fact that we exist in a different position in the field than a lot of the arts leaders who are running organizations where, you know, who are hiring these roles. I mean, we're working on their behalf, but they're working, you know, within the organizations. I wonder, you know, if we have a particular vantage point on all of this, because we are very proactively reaching out to people and talking to them about these roles and trying to persuade them, frankly, to come work in these organizations, you know, we get that feedback in a very different way that is not necessarily evident in the sort of silence in a hiring inbox in an HR office. You know, like if people are not applying for a role, you don't always know why. With us, we almost always know why, because we're having those conversations and we're closer to the ground in terms of doing that kind of active outreach. And so we get that feedback directly. We have those human connections with people, and it all just becomes very clear. So, you know, that's that in a way, while it's a function of our work, is also a real benefit we have. So we are grateful to be able to pass that perspective on to the field at large.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that position that you're in terms of being able to receive feedback directly from clients who are looking to leave their companies. And I'd love to now shift our conversation a little bit to just some of the insights, some of the things that you've learned, the other factors that perhaps you've noticed, contributing bigger picture to this idea of the Great Resignation and this point that we're in. You know, as you're having conversations with these candidates, what are some other themes that you're seeing contribute to people's desire to leave, or just difficulties around retention?
I will try not to deliver you an entirely new podcast episode with this topic, because I could go in a lot of different directions with this. So I'm gonna pick a few, I'm not going to try and summarize what economists who are much better educated than I am would tell you about the sort of macroeconomic factors in play in our economy right now. But sure. from my vantage point in the arts, you know, I put the Great Resignation, so-called, into a few different buckets. Realistically, just the way that our workforce works, the way that advancement happens within our field and in a lot of fields, you know, people have to change jobs to advance. And there was a lot of fear about changing jobs during the pandemic. And people are now making the choice to say, okay, it's time for me to make a move and get something better, that gets better pay, that gets greater responsibility, all of that. There's that. There is also the bucket of what I would call, I'm prone to alliteration, so please, you can just try to groan silently. But you know what I call sort of like the exhale and exit effect. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, I've worked in a lot of arts organizations before I started a consulting firm, and I have worked in organizations that have opened new theaters, that have gone through major capital campaigns, that have gone through really large projects, that on the other side of them, the staff sort of can often stop and say, like, okay, I climbed that mountain. I need to take a breath and find the next mountain and go do something else, or they just need a break and they want to do something else. And so that is a phenomenon that we see in organizations quite often when they're on the other side of a major capital project or things like that. The whole field has just gone through something like that in trying to get through COVID. I mean, the truly Herculean efforts of leaders at all levels of organizations and workers at all level of organizations to get through COVID in one piece is major. And so, you know, we're not on the other side of it entirely, obviously. But anybody who's seen the number of cancellations just in the past week knows that. But we are at a place where I think a lot of people are feeling like, okay, the quote unquote worst of it is past and it's time to think about something new. So there's that. But the last sort of bucket that I think about is, to me, most important. It may not be the biggest, it may not be the largest, but to me, it's the most important, which is something that I've written a little bit about the way that I frame the Great Resignation, is that I think of it as sort of the great boundary setting. That I think, and it kind of comes back to what we were talking about before with, like, the passion pay gap and all those kinds of things. But I think that a lot of folks are either finding another organization or leaving the business entirely because of the working conditions of the organization in which they work. I think that I'm not saying this is every organization by any means. I've worked in some wonderful organizations and I work with a lot of wonderful organizations. However, I'm well aware that there are a lot of organizations in which the employee morale is incredibly low because of the conditions in which they work, not just during COVID, but because of bad behavior that's tolerated because of mm-hmm. the way that, you know, leadership treats them, because of, you know, complete lack of work-life balance and needing to work constantly to sort of, you know, in support of the art at all costs. And they're sort of just seen as a cog in a wheel. And I think that there are a lot of folks who are pretty tired of that. And during COVID, I'm not by any means minimizing the incredible financial challenges that organizations had. I counseled CEOs and presidents of organizations through the whole pandemic, and there were a lot of really hard conversations to be had. But there are a lot of folks who looked and said, like, I've spent the last many years, you know, serving this art form, and during this time of crisis, that was not enough to sort of, you know, keep me on board. I lost my salary. I was furloughed, whatever. And again, a lot of the times those decisions were totally understandable, and they were the right decision for that organization. But it just adjusts people's priorities in a way that allows them and sort of forces them to reevaluate the boundaries of what they're willing to give to that organization. So in any event, that's, to me, the biggest one we need to grapple with as a field, particularly where it's in the category of working conditions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a major thing we do have control over, we can tackle as a field.
This idea of work-life balance, I feel is such a big one these days, just given what the past 2 years has looked like. In my opinion, in my life, that has always been a big factor. But I think especially now, this idea of the space and rest that we need to function as human beings, given what the past 2 years has looked like, I feel like the need for work-life balance and just the consideration of how you spend the pie chart of your lifetime is just more prevalent than ever. That really resonates with me. One thing that I think is really interesting is that we just spent all of this time talking about salary, and salary was not one of those big buckets that you just brought up. And I want to highlight that that isn't the trend necessarily that you're observing, and that it's more about these other bigger picture ideas that are affecting our industry and just affecting us as human beings. I think that that's really, really interesting. And I think perhaps reinforces or perhaps could even take away some of the fear mm-hmm. that we were talking about earlier. That's not necessarily what it is that people are trying to run away from. It seems like there are some bigger picture things at play there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly may be a part of the larger economic forces in play, but I think that from the things that people will logically convey about what is influencing their decisions right now, the only time salary comes into play is when they're, at least in my world, is when they're looking to advance and they feel like it's time for them to level up. You know, it's not always the first thing.
Yeah. So, one more thing that I'd love to talk about is hiring practices and how that plays into this, plays into retention, plays into the perception of an employee, of the culture of the organization that they work for. How do you see a company's hiring practices playing into that for an existing employee when it comes to retention and culture?
I mean, I think that there is a big difference between hiring people to complete tasks and hiring people who are also in alignment with a vision. You know, and I think that they obviously need to complete the tasks. You know, they have a job to do, but they need to align with a vision. And to get to that, there are no magical interview questions. It takes sort of, you know, intention. I mean, there are great interview questions, and we use all of them, of course.
But it takes
the sort of intentional design of a process. You know, that where, you know, in terms of who that person gets to meet, who that, you know, how much that process. Again, coming back to the word, the honor word, how much that process honors that person's decision as much as the organization's decision says a lot about that company. And so I want to also be intentional to say that I really try to refrain from talking about culture fit. I use the word culture a lot, but not culture fit, because every company has a culture, but it should be a responsive one that welcomes. And otherwise, all the diversity initiatives in the world are just an invitation to assimilate into this culture. And yes. I think that, you know, the hiring process says a lot to a person about the company's real values in that area as well. And so that tells you whether this is a place where I can, you know, not to rip off Brené Brown, but I will because I do it every day, is this a place where I'm going to belong, or is it a place where I'm going to fit in and sort of be forced into a box? And mm-hmm. I think that really says a lot to people. But yeah, I mean, since we're all arts people, presumably all arts people listening to this, you know, I really liken sort of hiring and onboarding practices to that sort of first experience of attending an arts event or company or venue or whatever. You know, the show has to be really good for you to forget that you had a bad experience at the box office or with the ushers or all that kind of thing. And if your hiring process on the way in was treating you sort of like you were on an assembly line, or that it wasn't honoring your life decisions, the time that you need to make decisions, you know, what the information is that's going to be key to that decision-making process, it says a lot about your value to that company.
Yeah, that one really resonates for me, especially when it comes to the time you need to make the decision. I talk to so many friends who are going through the process of interviews and trying to decide what their next job will be. And just this pressure, this urgency that I feel is put on that process oftentimes. And when you bring the word honor into it, it should be a no-brainer to, you know, be able mm-hmm. to take the time that you need to make a decision. And of course, there are the needs on both sides, right? The needs of the organization you're going to and your needs as an individual. But I think oftentimes it's easy to throw the individual needs out the door in order to completely bend over backwards for the needs of an organization. And that doesn't resonate with the word honor. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And I'm sympathetic to folks who have that sense of urgency, although learning to counter it with another thought in your own mind will go a long way, because I'm an employer. I have a team and I'm always in a place where, you know, it'd be nice for the person to start when they need to start, but I know that an employee is a long-term investment. They're not a tool. They're a long-term investment in a person. And if the time that it takes for that person to make that decision or to start or any of those kinds of things is what it takes, and that's going to start them off on the right foot, it's worth it, you know. It's the same reason why I encourage every employee that's joining my team to take a week off between their old job and this job, because we want them to know that that's a part of our values for them to be fresh. It doesn't mean they're not going to work hard and sometimes too hard for brief periods of time, but it's about how you set that tone from the outset.
Absolutely, the responsibility on both sides, not just on the individual. We're coming to the end of our time together, as sad as I am, because I feel like I could talk to you for hours about several offshoots from this conversation.
But I was going to say, I feel like I've been on your podcast a few times and I've talked about completely different things every time. And it's kind of fun to come back and talk about this.
I know. Perhaps I'll make you stay with me here off the air and continue to talk. but for our listeners, we are now at our CI2I moment. So, if you could broadcast one piece of advice to the leadership teams, staff, and boards of thousands of arts organizations, what would you want them to know right now?
I think I would first want to zoom out and talk about what we're really talking about when we're talking about these topics. And that is basically our focus as a firm, which is organizational health for the arts. Organizations that really care about their communities and do so authentically, I think, need to acknowledge that their people within their organization are the core of their community, not the servants of their community. And so, you know, the health of our field and the health of our organizations are directly tied to the health of our people that work with us and for us in our teams. So we started this conversation talking about salary transparency, and that is sort of one tactic on a long list of ways we can honor the lived experience of these people who work in this field and give so much to it. I hope that we can keep going and not stop there, because I think that on the other side of what we're going through right now with COVID and all the massive disruption in our field and in our world, that is what is going to see us through. You know, the people that are quote still here, and the people that come here.
Thank you, Tom. This has been such an inspiring conversation.
It is my pleasure always, Priya. Thank you. That's all for this episode of Changing Arts. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our friends at Capacity Interactive, especially Priya Iyer, Eric Gensler, and MP. This podcast is brought to you by Tom O'Connor Consulting Group. Production coordinator is Christine O'Connell. Editing and music is by Roy Latham of Latham Media Supply, and graphics are by Morgan Bosher. Thanks as well to Ronnie Haywood, Cynthia Furman, Edie Demas, Jordan Sanford, Melanie Griffiths, and Paul Hildner. We will see you next time.